So it's a perfect time to talk about this. We've got Jim Harbaugh on one hand, back in the NFL, now with the Chargers, former 49ers coach. Started out at University of San Diego, then went to Stanford, turned around the 49ers very, very quickly. Took them to a couple NFC championship games and a Super Bowl. And was simultaneously very successful, but also very frustrating for a lot of 49ers fans. So I think people are watching him with great intrigue now that he's back in the league. And on the other hand, you've got one of Jim Harbaugh's successors as the head coach of the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan, somebody who's taken San Francisco to a couple NFC championship games and a Super Bowl, but like Harbaugh, didn't win that Super Bowl. So seen a lot of success with the 49ers, but has simultaneously frustrated their fans. A lot of parallels, right, between Jim Harbaugh and Kyle Shanahan as far as resume when they're the 49ers coach. Now, stylistically different. Kyle Shanahan runs his dad's outside zone scheme with his own bells and whistles, his own evolution. While Jim Harbaugh was a power running coach. Jim Harbaugh liked the old school Bo Schembechler style. Comes from Michigan, then he returned to Michigan after he left the 49ers, won the national championship there last year, but we just watched Jim lose to John again. We saw the Harbowl again. The Harbowl obviously probably brings back bad memories for 49ers fans. That was the 2012 season in New Orleans. The Super Bowl is going to be back in New Orleans for the first time since then, since the Harbowl this year. The 49ers do not look to be on good track to make it back to that Super Bowl, but there still is football left to be played. Still, I think that talking about Jim Harbaugh, how that tenure with the 49ers ended, and talking about Kyle Shanahan and the frustrations and the big picture ebb and flow of how the 49ers are doing it now, talking about all that and putting perspective and zooming out and looking at, you know, entire eras instead of just singular moments in time, I think it makes a whole lot of sense now on the night that we saw Jim and John Harbaugh play against each other again. It was the Ravens over the Chargers. So John has now bested Jim in 2011. That was the Thanksgiving night game when the Ravens beat the 49ers in Baltimore. He's beaten them in the 2012 season. That was the Super Bowl. That, you know, you look at bad playoff losses. I don't think that Kyle Shanahan has a truly bad playoff loss with the 49ers, right? You go to 2019, they got beaten by the Kansas City Chiefs. There's no shame in losing to Patrick Mahomes and company. In 2022 or 2021, they lost to the Rams. They're beaten up. That was the eventual Super Bowl champion. Wasn't like they lost to a deeply inferior team in 2021. 2022, not much you can do about it when all of your quarterbacks get hurt. They finished against the Philadelphia Eagles without a healthy quarterback. In 2023, it was the Chiefs again. Patrick Mahomes establishing himself as the Michael Jordan of this era of the NFL, and the 49ers have lost to him now twice in the Super Bowl. But the 49ers of 2012, when Jim Harbaugh lost to John Harbaugh in that Super Bowl, you can make an argument that the 2012 Ravens were the worst Super Bowl winner of all time. If there is a Super Bowl that you should pull your hair out in frustration as a 49ers fan, I think that, and you got to pick one, I think that you have to pick the 2012 season Super Bowl, 47 in New Orleans. That was an all-star team that the 49ers ran out there. I mean, these guys, they had so much talent on both sides of the ball. Harbaugh obviously inherited and then coached up all that talent in 2011, but by 2012, he was able to take it to a supercharged level. That was the peak of Colin Kaepernick. They still had prime years of Frank Gore. Patrick Willis was nearing the end, but still playing really, really, really good footballs before the toe started bothering him. In what, 2014 was his final season. Navarro Bowman, Justin Smith. I mean, we can go down the list. Joe Staley was the left tackle of that football team. They had Randy Moss. The 2012 49ers had Randy Moss, and he was still effective. It was past prime Randy Moss, but he was still an effective wide receiver. So they're absolutely loaded, and they're facing a Ravens team that needed a miracle. They converted like a 4th and 30, I believe, with Ray Rice that year in week 17 to make the playoffs. They needed miracles to advance through the playoffs. They somehow upset the New England Patriots on the way, and the 49ers are big-time favorites over the Ravens, but they end up losing the Super Bowl to, again, I think it was the worst Super Bowl champion of all time. I'm probably making some of you gouge your eyes out again talking about this, but the, you know, we talk about Jim Harbaugh and Kyle Shanahan, the amount of pain that 49ers fans have gone through with both these guys, their head coach. And it only, you know, I said it before the Super Bowl last year, you're nervous because it means something to you. So along the same lines, it only hurt because the 49ers were so successful getting to that level. It doesn't matter if you lose a week 14 game. You're not going to remember that 10 years later, right? I might, because I seem to have a photographic memory with these kind of things. But meaningless games, or relatively meaningless games, have meaningless outcomes in the long term. It's the meaningful games, the games that have a ton at stake that a team has to earn. Team has to be good. A coach has to be good to lead a team there. When you lose those are the ones that tend to sting forever, or at least for a really, really long time. So 49ers fans have had to deal with the 2011 NFC Championship game loss to the Giants, the Kyle Williams game. They've had to deal with the Super Bowl to the worst Super Bowl winner ever. I mean, it was Ray Lewis on his last legs playing against the 49ers. Haloti Ngata, the big defensive tackle, was already out of the game when the 49ers couldn't score at the end, when they were throwing the fade pass to Michael Crabtree instead of handing the ball off to Frank Gore. The 2013 NFC title game against the Seahawks and Richard Sherman, that all came full circle. Fast forward to the 2019 Super Bowl 54 against the Kansas City Chiefs. You've now moved into the Shanahan territory, coming off of an adrenaline rush of a season featuring the win over the Saints, 48-46 back in New Orleans in the Superdome. The NFC Championship game, the 37-20 win over the Packers. How about the Seattle win that year? 49ers with Dre Greenlaw at the goal line to win the division, finally exercise the demons up in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, so you had all these massive wins, which build up into this anticipation and put you into this position. You know, if you're a fan, and a lot of fans are watching right now, put you into this position of having your heart potentially ripped out if the wins are all followed by a loss. The stage gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like that show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, right? Every single question is worth more money. But if you get the million-dollar question wrong, then you lose all the money and all the questions that you had gotten right before it. So to me, that's what it's like to step up to the Super Bowl, is that you're getting these big wins. Yes, it's impressive, 250K, 500K, you know, moving on up. But if you lose on the million-dollar question, you take that swing. You don't walk away, because you're not going to walk away from a chance to win a Super Bowl. But if you miss there, it gives this hollow feeling of devastation. And there's been a ton of that for the 49ers over the course of the past 30 years, since they haven't won a Super Bowl since 1994 season. But there's been an extra dosage of it over the past 15 years. Jim Harbaugh was hired a little less than 15 years ago by the 49ers. I didn't even get through all the heartbreaking losses and all the big wins, but there have been a lot of them. And I think that people, when they judge both of these coaches, need to realize that the human mind tends to put roses around the past. So the further away you get from something, the more positively you're going to view it. So the further away I think 49ers fans have gotten from the Harbaugh era, and I think they did amazing things in the Harbaugh era. I believe at least the first 3 years was the best record of any head coach ever in his first 3 years as an NFL head coach. And they went to the NFC title game in all 3 years. They went to the Super Bowl one of those years. But I also remember during that time, people were going crazy over their frustrations with 49ers' delay of game penalties and, you know, their clock management at the line of scrimmage, and some of the offensive inconsistency, especially once 2013 came around. You know, 2012 with this massive unexpected jolt from Colin Kaepernick, and then 2013 turned into a little bit more of a slog. And then by 2014, when they went 8-8 and there was the feud in the front office and all of that happened, obviously there were not a lot of content people in 49ers land. But as it gets further away, yeah, you remember the jolts of energy, the adrenaline, the positives a lot more. Right now, if we want to take that historical context and place, you know, help us contextualize where the 49ers are with Kyle Shanahan, we're definitely in the storm of frustration, right? The 49ers' epic runs in 2021, 2022, and 2023 that did not finish with a Super Bowl championship. And now they might be paying for the physical and spiritual toll of those runs. I mean, Kansas City has gone on deep runs too. Kansas, like the 49ers, the Kansas City Chiefs played 60 games over the three seasons entering this one. There are two teams that have had to play 60 games total over the three seasons entering this one. The 49ers and the Chiefs. One seems to be handling it a lot better than the other. One of them is, what are the Chiefs? 9-1 at this point? 10-1? A lot of wins and only one loss to the Buffalo Bills, who the 49ers are playing this weekend. The other team that's played 60 games in 3 years, the 49ers, they're sitting here at 5-6. And it's likely they're going to move to 5-7 because it's going to be really hard to beat Buffalo. And we don't even know if Brock Purdy is going to be available on Sunday. So you've got these divergent paths. And the way I look at it is Kansas City was able to finish the job and win the Super Bowl, not only in 2019, but also in 2022. And then again in 2023, they're going for the three-peat this time. Every single time that you actually do finish the job and win the Super Bowl, I think it gives you some wind at your sails, not just confidence, but it also that star core, the coaching staff. There's this belief and there's this energy boost that comes with it. If you lose in that final game, as the 49ers have twice now under Kyle Shanahan in 2019 and in the 2023 season, it does the opposite. It's a deflating feel. That's why we talk about the Super Bowl hangover in 2020. That was a year from hell for the 49ers. And then we talk about the Super Bowl hangover here in 2024, which is also lining up to be a torturous year. I think the 49ers, they've gone through a wild amount of strain and roller coaster ride of big games without that Super Bowl title at this point, to where it's almost inevitable that there's going to be some wear and tear since they're not getting that turbo boost that would come from actually winning a Super Bowl. Because it wasn't just 2023 and losing in overtime against the Chiefs. It was 2022 and ripping off that 10-game win streak, whatever it was. Maybe it was in 12 at some point. I lost count. It was 12 or 13 games at one point after Christian McCaffrey came aboard, but then seeing Brock Purdy go down and then losing your chances. 2021, I mean, that was completely different. The 49ers were holding on for dear life. They had a roar back from 3-5, and they won elimination games against the Rams, and then they won another one against the Cowboys and the Packers at Lambeau Field in -4-degree weather, and then they ran out of gas against the Rams. I mean, there's been such an exhausting run that the 49ers have gone on. Every single season now, dating back to that last hangover season in 2020, yet no actual Lombardi Trophy hardware at the end. So I think that it's inevitable that at some point exhaustion comes through for the 49ers. At some point, it does catch up to them. We might be seeing it right now. It's one of those reset kind of situations, right? They entered the season with a deep, robust roster. I think we saw them flex that roster against the New York Jets in week one, but a lot of the drama, a lot of the stuff off the field, you know, nearly tragic incident with Ricky Pearsall. There's been a laundry list of things that have happened. And I think it's whittled away at the 49ers' psyche here over the course of the year to where, you know, they're not out of it now. They're technically only a game out of first place, but they've got a lot of teams, three teams in the NFC West ahead of them, and they're on a slide. They're not sure if their top offensive player or their top defensive player is going to be available for a game against one of the best teams in the NFL on Sunday. It's serious gut check time, and it's also time to consider what the retool for the 49ers is going to look like. Two things can be true at once. You can say they're still competing, but you can also say that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have tried to run this dual track thing. They've tried to keep things sustainable as they push the chips in and compete every single season. They're trying to do a little bit of both. Well, you have to think about a little bit of both if you're the 49ers. And if you think, well, if this season does end up going more down the 2020 route by the time it's all said and done, how are you going to rebound and make sure that 2025 is like 2021 through 2023 and not another repeat? How do you make sure that you continue ascending after your retool year instead of descending? I think frustration of the 49ers fans with the Jim Harbaugh era and how that was handled by Jed York. Obviously, Trent Baalke was in there during that feud. Is that Harbaugh never had a chance to rebuild his team after a slide started, right? He came in 2011 and inherited a lot of good players. They added some good players, but he was able to turn Alex Smith's career around, made him a competent quarterback that wouldn't ruin the game for the 49ers. And they went all the way to that NFC championship game. And then he and Baalke oversaw the creation of a true superpower in 2012, but they blew that game against John Harbaugh and the Ravens. And then the decline started in 2013. They weren't as good in 2013 as they were in 2012, but they were still capable. They were play away from heading to the Super Bowl, which they probably would have won had they beaten the Seahawks, because the Seahawks trounced Peyton Manning and the Broncos. What was it, 40-8? I think it was 40-8. That was the one where the safety happened on the first play. Peyton Manning took a safety on the very first play from scrimmage in the Super Bowl, cold weather Super Bowl in New York. And then 2014, the 49ers squeaked out an 8-8 record, but that was when the mutual parting happened and Harbaugh was gone. Harbaugh was on his way to Michigan. A lot of 49ers fans frustrated that he didn't have the chance, because Trent Baalke ended up coming out on top of that feud. Harbaugh didn't have the chance to rebuild the 49ers. He only got one cycle, basically. He got the up cycle, which he made happen insanely quickly in 2018, peaked in 2012, and then it slid down, and by 2014 it was over, and he never got to rebuild. Shanahan, meanwhile, he's been with the 49ers for longer, right? Shanahan aboard in 2017, inherited a bleak roster. They built it up by 2019, and there was the weirdest year ever, right? I think the two weirdest years of 49ers history are 2020 and 1991. A lot of crazy stuff happened in 1991. It was the year after the failed three-peat. Yeah, that's a good historical connection too. 49ers 88, 89, they win Super Bowls. 1990, they go for the three-peat. So they max themselves out trying to win three Super Bowls in a row, kind of like Kansas City's trying this year. And they just hit the wall in the NFC Championship game. Joe Montana gets hurt. Marshall hits Joe Montana. That's the big injury. Steve Young comes in, but Roger Craig fumbles. Devastating loss. Barr hits the field goal for the New York Giants. They win by a point, and the 49ers' three-peat dreams are shattered. Just like the 2020 49ers who followed the 2019 devastation, and just like these 2024 49ers who are following 2023 devastation, that's what it seems like is happening here. It seems like that slide is happening given the emotional high and now the subsequent letdown. In a very similar fashion, 1991 was a letdown of physical wear and tear, maybe some, you know, spiritual, emotional wear and tear. Joe Montana didn't play for most of, or didn't play at all in that 1991 season. So it was... That was Steve Young's year, but then Steve Young got hurt as well. So they went to Steve Bono. They were on their third string quarterback in 1991. Crazy stuff like a fire happened. Speaking of New Orleans, they played a game at the Superdome in 1991, and literally a fire broke out on one of the catwalks up in the ceiling of the Superdome, and whatever was burning up there fell down to midfield while they were playing. And since it was 1991 and not 2023 or 2024, they actually even kept playing for a while there was a fire going on up in the Superdome. Crazy stuff. Like that was a season that was so bizarre that only 2020 could hold a candle to it. I wrote about the 91 season in 2020 when the 49ers were going through that weird stretch. So it was a recalibration year for the 49ers. They were 10-6, but they didn't make the playoffs. They lost the game on a Hail Mary to Atlanta in 91 that prevented them from making the playoffs. Like nothing went right for them, right? They even tried to unveil a crazy new uniform that was ugly as hell, and it didn't work out. It was one of those bad vibe, bad mojo years. But they rebooted, and in 1992, they made it back to the NFC Championship game. That's when Dallas got in their way, 92-93. In 94, they won the Super Bowl. So sometimes the point is that the path to ultimate glory is really difficult. It usually actually isn't easy. And you have to take this roundabout road to get there. Harbaugh never had the chance with the 49ers to take that roundabout path. He had one shot at it, really. He had that team that peaked from 2011 to 2013, that was his shot. Then it was over. Now he's back with the Chargers. While Kyle Shanahan, I think there was that blip in 2020, so he got the second bite out of the apple, but it was a lot of the same players, right? It's going to be very interesting now, though, because if this season continues at the trajectory that it's going at the moment, it will not end in a Super Bowl. It will be a retooling setup for the 49ers over the course of this offseason. And the next run that they do make at things in 2025 will have to be with Shanahan and Lynch's true second push at things. Because the current structure of the 49ers, I mean, there's already been a lot of turnover since 2019. Even since 2022, there's been a ton of turnover. It's just how the NFL works. But Brock Purdy is set to earn a new contract. What we saw out on the field in Green Bay without Brock Purdy all but guarantees that it's going to be a massive new deal for Brock Purdy. We already knew that before. Purdy's going to become the focal point financially of the 49ers this offseason, assuming everything continues the way that it's going. And we'll check in on Brock Purdy's health over the course of this week. As he becomes the focal point of the 49ers financially, there's a very clear need to revamp the defense. They're so dependent right now on Nick Bosa. When he doesn't play, it's a bad defense, like terrible. When he does play, they've been passable, but they haven't been dominant like they were a couple years ago. So there's a need to bring more balance to the roster, more youth to the roster. It's the oldest roster in football. We're already seeing that transition happen, by the way. The 2024 draft class, which has been really successful, has been the 49ers' first step in that regard. The finances of a young, effective rookie class fit really well with the expenditure that you're going to have to make on Brock Purdy, because the rookies are cost-controlled. They have four-year deals that fit under a very tight budget, while Purdy, obviously, that's not going to be a cost-controlled deal. That's probably going to be worth over $60 million a year. Meanwhile, while you're focusing on changing the pivot point of the team financially to Brock Purdy while also rebuilding your defense, you've got to focus on the supporting cast for Brock Purdy offensively. I think that means improvements to the interior line, center, left guard. Aaron Banks is going to be a free agent after this year. And it means sitting back, licking your wounds, and, you know, figuring out, making sure that the star players that you still do have under contract are set up to make a fresh run at things. Like, which ones are you going to keep? Which ones are, you know, they're committed to Christian McCaffrey. They just restructured his deal. They're committed to Trent Williams. They just restructured his deal. Somebody like George Kittle, though, is only under contract through 2025. Same thing with Deebo Samuel. I know after yesterday's game, there are a lot of people saying, well, you know, how long is Deebo Samuel going to be around? Is this it for him? I think that the next several games of this season are going to answer a lot of very, very interesting questions for how the 49ers approach the retool moving forward. And as long as the NFC West is as mediocre as it is, the 49ers are still going to be contending in this season, which makes it double interesting for me. I'm all about team building. I'm all about busting open the roster, You guys know the 90-man roster. I'm going to get that open right now. Looking to see how the 49ers are going to view the depth chart in terms of the big picture lens and how they're going to fit it all under the salary cap. This is what the roster looks like, by the way, for those of you who are uninitiated. So you can go ahead and check it out. And I think when we talk about Harbaugh, when we talk about Shanahan, you should comment who you prefer out of these two guys. I think that I did a good job going through all the history and the dynamics at play. But if you're a Harbaugh guy, put that in the comment section. If you're a Shanahan guy, put that in the comment section. And regardless of your allegiance in this debate, make sure that you check out the article grading the 49ers from Sunday's game. I'll answer a few questions. Then I have to go eat. I haven't eaten dinner yet. So I wanted to talk to you after the game. Mike sent me something. Oh, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. We'll get to it in a second. I'm ready for a 49ers Q&A, though. We got a lot of people saying Harbaugh. This is kind of proving my theory of people are going to put roses around the past. Back when I wasn't covering the 49ers yet, I covered Stanford and Harbaugh was there. And then I just watched the 49ers as an interested observer in the Bay Area while I was still covering college football when Harbaugh was there, having been familiar with Jim Harbaugh. And I thought he did a phenomenal job. I watched that with great interest. I even covered a game in 2013 when they played the Colts. The 49ers lost to the Colts, but that was when Andrew Luck came back to play against his former college coach, Jim Harbaugh. So that's the first time that I got credentialed to cover a 49ers game. It was at Candlestick. And that was a different era. I mean, and it was a similar era. It was a different era and it was a similar era because that team was loaded with star players. There were storylines everywhere. Just like this 49ers team is loaded with star players, there are storylines everywhere. The parallels are so fun to chart, but so are the differences, which is why I like to use it to open up some discussion because it's just really fascinating to me how people view these two coaching tenures about a decade apart. Post your questions. Pharrell saw Harbaugh when he was in San Diego before Stanford. And guess who Harbaugh's quarterback in San Diego was? Josh Johnson. The same Josh Johnson who came in for Brock Purdy in the NFC Championship game at Philadelphia after Purdy hurt his elbow. But then Johnson suffered a concussion, so the 49ers were out of quarterbacks. But how's that for a full circle moment? Kyle Shanahan got the quarterback who put Jim Harbaugh on the map before Andrew Luck. So back at the University of San Diego, Jim Harbaugh, stud head coach, coached Josh Johnson. Then he moved to Stanford where he recruited Andrew Luck. Harbaugh once told me a story of his recruitment of Andrew Luck. And he was also recruiting Landry Jones. You remember him? Former Oklahoma quarterback. I forgot where he played in the league. But Harbaugh was recruiting Landry Jones and Andrew Luck out of Texas. Luck was from Houston. And he was driving across the whole state to do it. And he was talking about like tumbleweeds hitting his car as he was driving across some boring ass road in Texas with no elevation change in sight. Now, how cool is that? You go all the way back to the Harbaugh Andrew Luck recruiting story when he first took over as Stanford's head coach in 2007, with Landry Jones being another target back then. They ended up getting Luck, and then Luck came back to face Harbaugh as the quarterback of the Colts in 2013. That was that game I was talking about, a Candlestick. And when Luck scored the game sealing touchdown, he spiked that ball with such intensity and ferocity that I swear to God, it went up. You know, Candlestick had two decks, right? And only two decks in that stadium, the lower deck and the upper deck. To me, it looked like that ball off the spike, off the reverberation, and it hit the turf, went all the way up to about the level of the suites and that separated the upper and lower deck. It meant a lot to Andrew Luck. Josh Johnson is now Lamar Jackson's backup quarterback with the Ravens. So Josh Johnson is under John Harbaugh now. His head coach is the other Harbaugh. So it's a family affair. And we just got done with 49ers Packers. I talked about the family fight I mean, that was crazy, right? Mike Holmgren developed Steve Young with the 49ers. Then he turned into the head coach of the Packers. Steve Mariucci developed Brett Favre with the Packers. And then he went on to be the head coach of the 49ers. You got all this crisscrossing. Well, look at this crisscrossing. Josh Johnson developed by Jim Harbaugh at San Diego. Then he enters the league and plays for Kyle Shanahan in a key NFC championship game. He's played for like half the league, by the way. Josh Johnson, it might be like 20 teams at this point. And now he's with the Ravens. Jim's brother, John, is the head coach. I didn't even know he was still in the league. I mean, the teams for Josh Johnson are crazy. We have to thank Mike right now because Mike has an epic graphic that I'm going to put up on the screen. We're going to get to look at every single one of the teams that Josh Johnson has played for. I mean, the font is probably not big enough for you guys, but I have to keep it like this. So let's go through that. This is the Josh Johnson NFL history. Started with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 08-11. Look at that. Harbaugh was the coach of the 49ers in 2012. So the star indicates that he was only an offseason or practice squad member. We can say the Sacramento Mountain Lions legend, Josh Johnson, played for the Sacramento Mountain Lions. I believe that was an arena team in 2012. The Browns in 2012, the Bengals in 2013, back with the 49ers and Harbaugh in 2014, his coach from San Diego, back to the Bengals in 15. Look at this. In 15, he played for four different teams. Imagine being on four different teams in one NFL season. The Bengals, the Jets, the Colts, and the Bills. So the 49ers are about to play this year. Then to the Ravens. So he played under John Harbaugh in 2016. Then up the coast, the Atlantic coast, to play for the New York Giants. Then he had a switch over to Houston in 17. Look, he finally played an entire season for one team, Houston Texans, in 2017. The Raiders in 2018. Sorry about that for Josh Johnson. Washington 2018. The San Diego Fleet in 2019. So he was teammates with Daniel Brunskill in 2019. That was an AAF team, the Alliance of American Football. The San Diego Fleet, I think they lasted like a season. But Daniel Brunskill, the former 49ers offensive lineman, was able to polish his skills with the San Diego Fleet, and then the 49ers brought him in. That was the spring of 2019. They brought him in, and he was a key member of their 2019 NFC Championship team. So Josh Johnson and Daniel Brunskill, who would have known? They intersected in 2019. The Detroit Lions in 2019. I don't know who the hell the Los Angeles Wildcats are, but Josh Johnson played for them in 2020. Then he came through with the 49ers in the COVID year, where basically everybody signed with the 49ers that year because they had like 562 players on injured reserve. Jets in 2021. So that was Robert Saleh. Yeah, so he followed Robert Saleh to the Jets in 21. Back to John Harbaugh in 2021 and the Ravens. Then to the Broncos. Then to the 49ers, where he played for Kyle Shanahan in the NFC Championship game. And now with the Baltimore Ravens. Holy crap. That is a resume. That rivals Dante Johnson's resume with the 49ers. Dante Johnson at one point had undergone 38 transactions with the 49ers. He'd either been cut or he re-signed or whatever, 38 transactions. I think that the spokespeople for DocuSign, you know, the virtual company where you sign a contract, should be Josh Johnson and Dante Johnson, the former 49ers defensive back, unrelated. I think that they would be perfect spokespeople for that company, right? Perfect spokesman for DocuSign. Look at this is insane. He's played for half the league and the Sacramento Mountain Lions and the Los Angeles Wildcats, two teams, or the Wildcats I'd never heard of until now. The Mountain Lions I'd heard of because people used to call Josh Johnson the Sacramento Mountain Lion legend. It's a hell of a resume, though. Started under Jim Harbaugh at the University of San Diego. His Wikipedia page is a full-time staff. Yes, it does. People still talking about Harbaugh and Kyle Shanahan in there, huh? I got to check one thing on my phone. If you have good questions, go ahead and punch them in. I'm willing to answer them. Not a lot of good questions, guys. That means I have to go to dinner. So everybody, thanks for watching. This was a good 49ers Q&A. I don't know if Purdy's playing it this week. The update today is that Brock Purdy threw today lightly. He felt good. They rested him over the weekend after he didn't feel good last Thursday. Throwing session today went better. Purdy will rest tomorrow. Next firm update on Brock Purdy is going to be Wednesday. All right, everybody, thanks for watching. And I've got one quick message for you. This message is my note of gratitude, which I've been given during some of these shows. We're thankful for Josh Johnson today. Because this month is all about gratitude, and Josh Johnson has just given us about 15 minutes worth of conversation on the show. But there's another person that we don't get to thank enough, ourselves. It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we are trying our best to make sense of everything. And in this crazy world, that isn't easy. Here's a reminder to send some thanks to the people in your life, including yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lombardi Lounge today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Lombardi Lounge. Check it out. Everybody, thanks for watching. We'll talk to you soon.